Hi, I'm Jackie Roble with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. During the next 30 minutes, I will be sharing nutrition information from the Nutrition Action Health Letter. Nutrition Action Health Letter is the flagship publication of the Center for Science and the Public Interest. Published 10 times a year, Nutrition Action provides honest, unbiased, science-based advice on nutrition and health. It's the world's largest circulation nutrition newsletter, bringing the latest nutrition news and advice to more than 500,000 readers. Nutrition Action is totally free of advertisings, so they're free to blow the whistle on products that aren't what they pretend to be, and to applaud the good ones. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. The following articles are from the April edition of the Nutrition Action Health Letter. It's Raining Supplements, a memo from Peter G. Lurie, President, Center for Science and the Public Interest. Never underestimate the creativity of an American industry to exploit a marketing opening. It's like that small hole in your roof. The rain finds it, and before you know it, you're sitting on your living room couch holding up an umbrella. And so it goes with dietary supplements, a grab bag category of products including vitamins, minerals, and herbals. The story dates to the late 1980s when an outbreak of an obscure illness called eosinophilia myalgia syndrome sickened more than 1,500 people and led to at least 37 deaths. The outbreak was ultimately attributed to a contaminated L-tryptamine amino acid supplement made in Japan. As a result, the FDA moved to require good manufacturing practices and restrict misleading claims on supplements. The supplement industry sprang into action, generating some 200,000 letters opposing FDA action. It also enlisted the help of powerful allies in Congress who had financial ties to the supplement industry. The paradoxical result was the 1994 Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, or DSHEA, which left the FDA with even fewer tools to police the supplement marketplace than before. That's where the drip, drip, drip turned into a torrent. By 2017, what had been a fledgling industry tallied $43 billion in domestic sales. And thanks to DSHEA, the FDA doesn't even know what's being sold. The vast majority of facilities go uninspected in any given year. When they are, more than half are cited for violations. Moreover, the marketplace is contaminated by false or misleading claims. DSHEA permits companies to make so-called structure-function claims, like promotes brain health, but not claims that mention a disease, like prevents Alzheimer's. Got that? Most supplements have never been adequately tested, or if they were, they failed to beat a placebo, in a randomized controlled trial. Meanwhile, the FDA has detected hundreds of supplements tainted with prescription drugs, usually for sexual enhancement or weight loss. And some supplements can cause serious adverse effects, like ephedra, now banned, or drug interactions, like St. John's wort. Others supplant effective drugs. Think opioid detox supplements. In February, the FDA sent letters warning 17 supplement companies that their claims to prevent, treat, or cure Alzheimer's or other diseases were unproved drug claims. Commissioner Scott Gottlieb also promised a larger effort to strengthen the FDA's regulation of supplements. That's a good start. It will be tough to squeeze this proverbial genie back into the pill bottle. The FDA needs more resources and more authority to police a marketplace flooded with the ineffective and sometimes dangerous products. But that's what you get when an industry with powerful friends finds a small hole in the roof. 21st Century Snake Oil, Three New Wellness Trends by Caitlin Dow. Adaptogens, butter coffee, essential oils. You can find them on websites ranging from Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop to Alex Jones's InfoWars. Can they curb stress, fight fatigue, or make you sharper? Or do they just lighten your pocketbook? Adapt to everything. Feeling run down, stressed, anxious? Adaptogens to the rescue, say enthusiasts. Ashwagandha, rhodiola, ginseng, and variety of mushrooms like cordyceps, reishi, and chaga are on most lists of adaptogens, plants that supposedly help your body adapt to stress. The list varies because adaptogens aren't clearly defined. The charm of adaptogens is that they work with your needs, specifically adapting their function to your body's needs, explained Amanda Chantel Bacon to WellandGood.com in May 2016. Bacon is the founder of Moon Juice, one of the biggest brands of adaptogen supplements. Charming indeed, but is there evidence that they work? Ashwagandha and rhodiola are the most widely studied adaptogens in people, but based on the best evidence, there's little reason to rush out to your nearest apothecary. There's more animal than human data on adaptogens, says Rashmi Mueller, an assistant professor of medicine at UCLA with board certifications in endocrinology and integrative medicine. There's no strong, high-quality data in people. Most studies are small and are varying quality. In one of the better trials, 57 adults with mild to moderate depression were randomly assigned to a placebo, 50 milligrams of sertraline, the generic version of the antidepressant Zoloft, or 340 milligrams of rhodiola every day. After 12 weeks, symptoms of depression were no different between groups. Some antidepressants only beat a placebo in people with severe depression. Do adaptogens combat stress and fatigue by balancing hormones, says some website claim. Small studies in humans show that adaptogens like ashwagandha can lower cortisol, the hormone released in response to stress in the morning, Mueller explains. But cortisol fluctuates throughout the day, so a single measurement doesn't tell you much. What's more, the idea of balancing our hormones with a supplement is kind of silly, she adds. Our bodies have incredibly nuanced mechanisms for balancing hormones, and hormones have different effects all over the body. If you take a supplement that affects a hormonal pathway, you have no way of controlling its effects. It could make your symptoms worse. What's more, Mueller points out fatigue or stress are rarely due to a hormonal imbalance. I try to work with people to address the source and triggers of their stress. I'm not opposed to using supplements when we have data to support their use, but unless you do something to mitigate or adapt the stress, just throwing herbal supplements into the mix can muddy the waters. And you could end up doing more harm than good. Ashwagandha, for example, may increase thyroid hormone levels, which could cause fatigue, anxiety, shortness of breath, and other problems. The bottom line? Claims that adaptogens fight fatigue, stress, or anxiety aren't backed by good human evidence. Hot buttered bologna. Bulletproof coffee is not your average latte, declares Bulletproof's website. It's a high-performance drink that has a massive impact on your energy and cognitive function. Bulletproof coffee, also called butter coffee, is meant to replace breakfast. The official Bulletproof recipe transforms a simple cup of joe into a nearly 500-calorie fat-laden drink by blending up 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter and medium-chain dry glyceride, or MCT oil, into 8 to 12 ounces of coffee. Proponents recommend starting with 1 teaspoon of MCT oil and working your way up, since some people report that oil leads to bloating, gas, and diarrhea. That means no protein, fiber, healthy fat, carbs, fruits, or vegetables for breakfast. Just roughly 2 days' worth of saturated fat. The sat fats in MCTs raise LDL or bad cholesterol, but not as much as the sat fats in butter do. Enthusiasts claim that it's the ketones, which the liver makes when it breaks down MCTs, that keep you focused. Pair ketones with the slowly releasing caffeine and you can literally feel your brain turning on, claims Bulletproof. The brain usually runs on glucose or blood sugar, but when blood glucose levels are down, the brain can use ketones as an alternative fuel source, says Jason Brandt, a neuropsychologist at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. For example, when researchers made 11 people with type 1 diabetes score poorly on tests of attentive and memory by lowering their blood sugar, MCT oil reversed the decline. But are brains sharper when they burn ketones instead of glucose? No human studies have looked. The evidence to support the butter coffee trend is all anecdotal, says Brandt. The bottom line? There's no evidence that replacing your breakfast with butter coffee has a massive impact on cognitive function, as Bulletproof promises. Sense nonsense. What can essential oils do for you? Use sweet orange to quell anxiety, lavender to sleep better, and rosemary for better focus at work, says Health.com. Essential oils are made by cold pressing or steam distilling plant material. They're usually inhaled as part of aromatherapy, though some people recommend swallowing or rubbing them on your skin. Some studies report subtle effects on anxiety, stress, or thinking ability, but the quality of the trials is often deplorably low, says Edzard Ernst, emeritus professor of complementary medicine at the University of Exeter in Britain. So why do some people swear by essential oils? It may be the power of suggestion. In one trial, 90 women inhaled lavender or neroli. Heart rates rose in those who were told that the scent they were smelling was stimulating and dropped in those who were told that the scent was relaxing. It didn't matter which scent they smelled. Essential oils may not just be a waste of money. The National Capital Poison Control Center cautions that they may not be harmless. For topical use, essential oils must be diluted, says Ernst. Even then, rashes and allergic reactions are possible, and they are not rare. Some oils are dangerous. For example, as little as 1 teaspoon of wintergreen oil has as much of an active ingredient, salicylate, as roughly 20 aspirins, and eucalyptus oil has caused seizures when inhaled, swallowed, applied to the skin, or used as nasal drops. The bottom line? Aromatherapy is a bit of old-fashioned pampering, says Ernst, but therapeutic claims for essential oils are usually bogus. And don't assume that the oils are harmless if you swallow or rub them on your skin. Quick studies. A snapshot of the latest research on diet, exercise, and more. Blood pressure and the brain. Does keeping a lid on your blood pressure help keep your brain sharp as you age? Researchers randomly assigned 9,361 people aged 50 or older with hypertension to take drugs to lower their systolic blood pressure to one of two targets, less than 140, standard treatment, or less than 120, intensive treatment. But after 3 years, the trial was cut short when it became clear that the intensive group had a lower risk of strokes, heart attacks, and death. After the 3-year trial and 3 years of follow-up, there was no difference in probable dementia, the primary outcome, although the trial may have been too short to see one. However, the intensive treatment group had a 19% lower risk of mild cognitive impairment than the standard group. What to do? Aim for a blood pressure of 120 to lower your risk of a heart attack or stroke, and possibly to protect your memory and thinking ability. Sugar and liver fat. Can cutting added sugars trim liver fat? Scientists randomly assigned 40 adolescent boys with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, NAFLD, to either their usual diet or to a low-sugar diet, which was low in both added sugars and fruit juice. Dietitians planned, and the study provided, all the food for the lower sugar group's families. The usual diet group got a weekly food stipend. After 8 weeks, liver fat fell and liver enzymes improved, more in the low-sugar group than in the usual diet group, though neither liver fat nor enzymes reached normal. But that may be partly because the low-sugar diet was healthier overall. The low-sugar boys lost 3 pounds while the usual boys gained a pound. The researchers adjusted for that. What to do? It's worth cutting back on sugars if you have fatty liver disease, even though, as one study author told the New York Times, this is a step, it's not a final word. Lightheadedness and salt. Feel lightheaded when you stand up? Take advice to eat more salt with, a grain of salt. Scientists fed 412 people a typical U.S. diet or a fruit and veggie-rich DASH diet with high, 3,300 milligrams a day, medium, 2,400 milligrams, or low, 1,500 milligrams, levels of sodium for a month each. The people reported lightheaded episodes more often on the high than on the low-sodium DASH diet. Sodium had no impact when they ate a typical U.S. diet. What to do? Don't assume that extra salt will make you less lightheaded. Beer before wine? You won't feel fine. Grape or grain, but never the twain. That's one folk remedy to minimize hangovers. Apparently, no one ever tasted the twain. So researchers randomly assigned 90 people, aged 19 to 40, to drink enough beer to reach a breath alcohol concentration of 0.05%, and then drink enough white wine to reach a BRAC of 0.11%, well above the 0.08% limit for adult drivers in most states. Reach the same BRAC levels with wine before beer, or reach the same BRAC levels with beer or wine alone. The order or type of drink had no impact on hangovers. What to do? Want to dodge a hangover? Drink less. The Healthy Cook. Takeout Tonight by Kate Sherwood. What's healthier or tastier than takeout or delivery? Pair these two dishes for my veggie-rich spin on Chinese food. Shiitake tofu stir fry, 2 tablespoons dry sherry, 2 tablespoons reduced sodium soy sauce, 2 teaspoons maple syrup, 1/2 teaspoon grated ginger, 1 teaspoon cornstarch, 1 teaspoon mild red chili flakes, optional, 1 tablespoon plus 2 tablespoons grapeseed oil, 8 ounces high protein or extra firm tofu cut into triangles, 1/2 pound shiitake caps quartered, 1/2 teaspoon toasted sesame oil, 1 scallion sliced. In a small bowl, mix together the sherry, soy sauce, maple syrup, ginger, cornstarch, and chili flakes with 1/4 cup of water. In a large nonstick pan, heat 1 tablespoon of the grapeseed oil over medium heat until shimmering hot. Saute the tofu until browned 3 to 5 minutes. Remove from the pan. Increase the heat to high and add the remaining 2 tablespoons of grapeseed oil. Stir-fry the mushrooms until browned 4 to 5 minutes. Add the soy sauce mixture to the pan and cook until the sauce thickens, 1 to 2 minutes. Remove from the heat and stir in the tofu and sesame oil. Top with scallions. Broccoli with garlic sauce. 1 tablespoon balsamic vinegar, 2 teaspoons reduced sodium soy sauce, 3 cloves garlic thinly sliced, 1 teaspoon molasses, 1/4 teaspoon cornstarch, 1/4 teaspoon, 1 teaspoon grapeseed oil, 4 cups broccoli florets, 1/2 red bell pepper sliced. In a small bowl, mix together the vinegar, soy sauce, garlic, molasses, and cornstarch with 1/4 cup of water. In a large nonstick pan, bring the oil and 1/3 cup of water to boil over high heat. Add the broccoli and peppers. Stir fry until the water has evaporated and the vegetables start to brown in spots, 2 to 3 minutes. Remove from the pan. Add the vinegar mixture to the pan. Cook, stirring constantly until the mixture is a syrup, 1 to 2 minutes. Spoon over the vegetables. Tips for grocery shopping safely. While most food is safe to eat, 1 out of 6 Americans will still get sick from eating contaminated food this year. Knowing how to safely shop for foods at your supermarket may help reduce your chances of becoming ill. Here are some tips on how to navigate your supermarket and ensure you are purchasing the safest food possible. Grab some plastic bags. When you get to the meat, poultry, and seafood, use each bag like a glove to pick up and wrap packages. Keep raw meat and seafood at the bottom of your shopping cart, separate from the produce. At the checkout counter, use a paper bag for meats and seafood. Recycle it when you get home. And a rewashable, usable cloth bag for other groceries. If your supermarket chain offers a loyalty card, get one. Some stores use them to contact shoppers who have bought a food that is recalled for contamination. How to unpack your food safely once you get home from the supermarket. Keep your fridge set at or slightly below 40 degrees and your freezer at 0 degrees. Put the items that need to stay coldest in the main shelves of the fridge rather than on the shelves in the door. Clean your fridge's shelves and bins regularly with cleaning spray, soapy water, or a homemade bleach solution. Discard or freeze leftovers containing meat, poultry, dairy, seafood, or eggs after 4 days. Don't rely on expiration and use-by dates exclusively to decide whether to discard items. Are There Benefits to Eating Slowly? By Bonnie Liebman. Eating slowly may help you eat less. Scientists offered 35 normal weight and 35 overweight or obese men and women a huge portion of the same lunch, pasta with tomatoes, olive oil, Parmesan cheese, garlic, herbs, and spices, on 2 separate occasions. On the fast eating day, the participants were told to eat their lunch as quickly as possible without feeling uncomfortable, to take large bites and chew quickly, and to not pause or put their utensils down between bites. They typically finished eating in 9 minutes. On the slow eating day, they were told not to rush, to take small bites and chew thoroughly, and to pause and put their utensils down between bites. They typically took 22 minutes to eat. The results? Slower eating cut the calories from about 890 to 800 in the normal weight people, but from only about 720 to 670 in the overweight or obese, which wasn't a statistically significant difference. Both groups were less hungry after eating slowly. What to do? Slow down. It takes time for your satiety hormones to kick in. Should you try pre-seasoned chicken breasts? By Jane Hurley. It doesn't take more than 10 minutes to season and broil, saute, or stir-fry a package of fresh boneless chicken breasts, but sometimes that's 10 minutes too many. Solution? Iyett Bell and Evans, Perdue, Tyson, or another company do the seasoning, and in some cases, the cooking. The downside? Salt. Only one product reviewed, Trader Joe's Grilled Balsamic Vinegar and Rosemary Chicken, met the recommendation sodium limit of 250 milligrams per serving. But that's only if you end up with a 3-ounce portion. The pieces don't come in a uniform size. We did find a handful of products with no more than 350 milligrams of sodium. Among the tastiest, grilled chicken breasts or breast fillets by Bell and Evans, Nature's Rancher, Nature Raised, and Tyson. Tyson Grilled and Ready Asian Chicken Thigh Fillets was also a crowd pleaser. Fast Fix and Flame Roasted Chicken Breasts would have met our recommended sodium limits, and Foster Farms Rotisserie Breast Fillets would have been under 350 milligrams if each breast weighed 3 ounces instead of 5 ounces. And Perdue's Raw Italian Style and Jamaican Style Jerk Perfect Portions both have 360 milligrams of sodium in a 5-ounce serving and would probably lose some sodium during the cooking. Are chicken and turkey dinner sausages healthy? The good news, chicken and turkey dinner sausages have at least 50% less saturated fat than their beef and pork cousins. And a growing list of companies, like Idel's, Alfresco, Applegate, Brathahn's, Trader Joe's, and Welcher, don't use sodium nitrate to cure their sausages. Nitrates may raise the risk of colorectal cancer by forming N-nitroso compounds in the gut. The bad news? There's no way to tell if you're getting less nitrites from the naturally occurring nitrates in the celery juice powder that replaces sodium nitrite in many no nitrates or nitrites added sausages. Then there's sodium, which typically ranges from 400 to 1,000 milligrams per link. Our only two recommendations, Trader Joe's sun-dried tomato and sweet apple chicken sausage, one because each link is small, 2.4 ounces, ounce for ounce, Alfresco Chipotle Chorizo and Spinach and Feta, and Brathahn's Sweet Apple, Organic Apple, and Sun-Dried Tomato and Basil Chicken Sausages are in the same ballpark, but their larger 3-ounce size puts their sodium, 400 to 440 milligrams, over the limit. How to eat healthy at an Italian restaurant. Bread. Leave it in the basket. You'll save 150 to 300 calories worth of white flour. Soup. Skip it to dodge 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams of sodium. Gillet a salad instead for less sodium, 400 to 800 milligrams of dressing, and more potassium-rich veggies. Items that are marked as light or lower calorie typically have 600 calories or less, though they're usually still loaded with sodium. Pasta sauce. Order tomato-based sauces like marinara, pomodoro, arrabbiata, or diavolo, around 200 calories, over the Alfredo, cream, pesto, or butter, at least 500 calories. Protein toppings? Seafood is best. Meat sauce beats meatballs. Sausage is worst. Sides? Get veggies, 50 to 200 calories, instead of potatoes, 200 to 500, or pasta, 300 to 700. Size? Order a lunch portion for about a third less calories, saturated fat, and sodium, or split an ordinary entree. Drinks? A glass of Chianti or Prosecco adds about 150 calories. Every glass of sangria, about 250. What can people do to protect their heart? Replacing saturated fat with polyunsaturated fats is important for protecting your heart, but it's not the only precaution you should be taking. This may sound surprising, but saturated fat is not the issue it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. That's because it's less harmful. It's because we have changed our diets, explains Martin Catan, an emeritus professor of nutrition at the Vrije Universiteit Amsterdam and a world-renowned expert on diet and cardiovascular disease. Less of our fat is saturated, and blood cholesterol levels have gone down markedly since the days when President Eisenhower had his heart attack, says Catan. And in the Netherlands, just about everybody who's at risk for heart disease is taking statins. That has a huge effect on cholesterol levels. The big issue now is not cholesterol, but obesity. Obesity is important because it leads to diabetes and the metabolic syndrome, which raise the risk of heart disease. Obesity is not caused by carbs or fats or proteins or whatever. That has caused a huge amount of confusion, explains Catan. Obesity is caused by foods that are tasty, attractive, cheap, convenient, and present 24/7. The easiest way to realize that is to think of foods that we all know to be obesogenic, like a double hamburger, a large Coke, French fries, and ice cream. Just before you're going to eat it, put it into a bucket and stir it around. The fats and carbs are the same, but it's no longer obesogenic because it's disgusting. The problem is that we're surrounded by appealing foods. It's this intricate wizardry that the food industry does with our foods that makes us want to eat more. It's not just the salt, fat, or sugar. It's also the sound that the food makes when you chew it. It's the smell and which smells are released in your mouth after 1 second, 2 seconds, 4 seconds. Also, that food is cheap and easy to stuff in your mouth, explains Catan. This is a billion-dollar industry, and that is what it is making us fat. Trying to couch that in terms of fat or carbs obscures the issue. Should people go on elimination diets to avoid heartburn? By David Shard. Chocolate, spicy foods, alcohol, coffee, carbonated beverages, high-fat foods like cheese, nuts, and red meat, they're all on WebMD's top 10 heartburn food list. Is avoiding these triggers the key to dodging heartburn? A lot of patients in my clinic with reflux disease have gone to the doctor who showed them a list of the trigger foods and told them to stop everything, says Lauren Garson, a gastroenterologist at the California Pacific Medical Center in San Francisco. The patients were miserable because their heartburn wasn't much better and they couldn't eat anything. I started thinking, is there evidence to support people going on these elimination diets? So Gerson and her colleagues at Stanford University, she was a professor there at the time, screened more than 2,000 studies looking for evidence that avoiding trigger foods helps curb reflux symptoms. There wasn't any data out there to demonstrate that if you stop these foods and drinks, GERD would get any better, notes Gerson. Take chocolate. Two small trials found that when healthy adults or people with reflux were given a chocolate drink or syrup, their esophageal sphincter relaxed, which could trigger reflux, and their esophagus was exposed to more acid, which would make symptoms worse. But there haven't been any studies demonstrating that if GERD sufferers stop eating chocolate, they're going to improve significantly, says Gerson. Nor have any studies looked at whether symptoms abate when people stop eating spicy foods like chili and curry, coffee, carbonated beverages, or high-fat meals. Avoiding trigger foods has become less evidence and more expert opinion, says Michael Vasey, director for the Center of Swallowing and Esophageal Disorders at Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville. Your trigger may not be somebody else's trigger. Individualized trigger avoidance is what I suggest to people, instead of giving a cookbook, one-size-fits-all laundry list of foods to avoid. That's all the time we have for Nutrition News. Until next time, I'm Jackie Roble for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This program is ready available as a podcast after the initial broadcast at triangleReadingService.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.